Tongues of Serpents by Naomi Novik. Narrated by Simon Vance. Copyright 2010 by Temeraire LLC. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Del Rey, an imprint of the Random House Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2010 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Part 1. Chapter 1. There were few streets in the main port of Sydney which deserved the name, besides the one main thoroughfare, and even that bare-packed dirt, lined only with a handful of small and wretched buildings that formed all the permanence of the colony. Tharkay turned off from this and led the way down a cramped, irregularly arranged alleyway between two wooden slat buildings to a courtyard full of men drinking, in surly attitudes, under no roof but a tarpaulin. Along one side of the courtyard, the further from the kitchens, the convicts sat in their drab and faded duck trousers, dusty from the fields and quarries, and weighted down with fatigue. Along the other, small parties of men from the New South Wales Corps watched with candidly unfriendly faces as Lawrence and his companions seated themselves at a small table near the edge of the establishment. Besides their being strangers, Granby's coat drew the eye. Bottle green was not in the common way, and though he had put off the worst excesses of gold braid and buttons with which Iskierka insisted upon adorning him, the embroidery at cuffs and collar could not be so easily detached. Lawrence wore plain brown himself. To make a pretence of standing in the aerial corps now was wholly out of the question, of course, and if his dress raised questions concerning his situation, that was certainly no less than honest, as neither he nor anyone else had yet managed to work out what that ought, in any practical sense, to be.
"I suppose this fellow will be here soon enough," Granby said unhappily.
He had insisted on coming, but not from any approval of the scheme.
"I fixed the hour at 6,
Tharkay answered, and then turned his head. One of the younger officers had risen from the tables and was coming towards them. 8 months aboard ship, with no duties of his own, and shipmates nearly united in their determination to show disdain, had prepared Lawrence for the scene which, with almost tiresome similarity, unfolded yet again. The insult itself was irritating, for demanding some answer more than anything else. It had not the power to wound in the mouth of a coarse young boor, stinking of rum and visibly unworthy to stand among even the shabby ranks of a military force alternately called the Rum Corps. Lawrence regarded Lieutenant Agroyth only with distaste, and said briefly,
"Sir, you are drunk. Go back to your table and leave us at ours."
There the similarity ended, however.
"I don't see why I,"
Agroyth said, his tongue tangling awkwardly, so he had to stop and repeat himself, speaking with excessive care.
"Why I should listen to anything out of a piss-pot, whoreson traitor's fucking mouth?"
Lawrence stared, and heard the tirade with mounting incredulity. He would have expected the gutter language out of a dockyard pickpocket in a temper, and hardly knew how to hear it from an officer. Granby had evidently less difficulty and sprang to his feet, saying,
"By God, you will apologize, or for halfpence I will have you flogged through the streets!"
"I would like to see you try it,"
Agroyth said, and leaning over, spat into Granby's glass. Lawrence stood too late to catch Granby's arm from throwing it into Agroyth's face. That was, of course, an end to even the barest hope or pretense of civility. Lawrence instead pulled Granby back by his arm, out of the way of Agroyth's wildly swinging fist, and letting go struck back with the same hand, clenched, as it came again at his face. He did not hold back. If brawling was outrageous, it looked inevitable, and he would as soon have it over with quickly, so the blow was armed with all the strength built up from childhood on rope, lines, and harness, and Lawrence knocked Agroyth directly upon the jaw. The lieutenant lifted half an inch from the ground, his head tipping back and leading the rest of his frame. Stumbling a few steps as he came down, he pitched face front onto the floor straight through the neighbouring table, to the accompaniment of several shattering glasses and the stink of cheap rum. That might have been enough, but Agroyth's companions, though officers, and some of them older and more sober than he, showed no reluctance in flinging themselves at once into the fray thus begun. The men at the overturned table, sailors on an East India merchantman, were as quick to take offence at the disruption of their drinking, and a mingled crowd of sailors and labourers and soldiers, all better than three-quarters of the way drunk, and a great scarcity of women, as compared to what would have been found in nearly every other dockyard house of the world which Lawrence knew, was a powder-keg ready for the slow match in any case. The rum had not finished sinking between the paving-stones before men were rising from their chairs all around them. Another officer of the New South Wales Corps threw himself on Lawrence, a bigger man than Agroyf, sodden and heavy with liquor. Lawrence twisted himself loose and heaved him down onto the floor, shoving him as well as could be managed under the table. Tharkay was already, with a practical air, seizing the bottle of rum by the neck, and when another man lunged, this one wholly unconnected with Agroyf and by all appearances simply pleased to fight anyone at all, Tharkay clubbed him upon the temple swiftly. Granby had been seized upon by three men at once. Two of them, Agroyth's fellows, for spite, and one who was trying his best only to get at the jewelled sword and belt around Granby's waist. Lawrence struck the pickpocket on the wrist, and seizing him by the scruff of the collar, flung him stumbling across the courtyard. Granby exclaimed then, and turning back, Lawrence found him ducking from a knife, dirty and rust-speckled, being stabbed at his eyes.
"My God, have you taken all leave of your senses?" Lawrence said,
and seized upon the knife-wielder's hand with both his own, twisting the blade away, while Granby efficiently knocked down the third man and turned back to help him. The melee was spreading rapidly now, helped along by Tharkay, who was coolly throwing the toppled chairs across the room, knocking over still more of the tables and flinging glasses of rum into the faces of the custom as they rose indignantly. Lawrence and Granby and Tharkay were only three together, and thanks to the advance of the New South Wales officers well surrounded, leaving the irritated men no other target but those same officers, a target on which the convicts in particular seemed not loath to vent their spleen. This was not a very coherently directed fury, however, and when the officer before Lawrence had been clubbed down with a heavy stool, the choleric assailant behind him swung it with equal fervour at Lawrence himself. Lawrence slipped upon the wet floorboards, catching the stool away from his face, and went to one knee in a puddle. He shoved the man's leg out from under him and was rewarded with the full weight of man and stool landing upon his shoulder, so they went sprawling together upon the floor. Splinters drove into Lawrence's side, where his shirt had ridden up from his breeches and come wholly loose, and the big convict, swearing at him, struck him on the side of his face with a clenched fist. Lawrence tasted blood as his lip tore upon his tooth, a dizzying haze over his sight. They were rolling across the floor, and Lawrence had no very clear recollection of the next few moments. He was pounding at the other man savagely, a blow with every turn, knocking his head against the boards over and over. It was a vicious, animal struggle, insensible of both feeling and thought. He knew only distantly as he was kicked, by accident, or struck against the wall, or some overturned piece of furniture. The limp unconsciousness of his opponent freed him at last from the frenzy, and Lawrence with an effort opened his clenched hand and let go the man's hair, and pushed himself up from the floor, staggering. They had fetched up against the wooden counter before the kitchen. Lawrence, reaching up, clutched at the edge and pulled himself to his feet, aware more than he wished to be all at once of a deep, stabbing pain in his side, and stinging cuts in his cheek and his hands. He fumbled at his face and pulled free a long sliver of broken glass, tossing it upon the counter. The fighting had begun already to die down, oddly quick to Lawrence's instinctive sense of an action. The participants lacked the appetite of a real engagement, where there was anything of worth to be gained. Lawrence, limping across the room, made it to Granby's side. Agroyth and one of his fellow officers had clawed their way back up onto their feet, and were yet grappling weakly with him in a corner, vicious but half exhausted, so they were swaying back and forth, more than wrestling. Coming in, Lawrence heaved Granby free, and leaning on each other, they stumbled out of the courtyard and into the narrow, stinking alleyway outside, which yet seemed fresh out from under the makeshift tarpaulin. A fine misting rain was falling. Lawrence leaned gratefully against the far wall, made cool and light by the coating of dew, ignoring with a practiced stomach the man a few steps away who was heaving the contents of his belly into the gutters. A couple of women coming down the alleyway lifted their skirts over the trickle of muck and continued past them all without hesitation, not even looking in at the disturbance of the tavern courtyard.
"My God, you look a fright," Granby said dismally. "I have no doubt," Lawrence said, gingerly touching at his face, "and I have two ribs cracked, I dare say. I'm sorry to say, John, you are not in much better case." "No, I'm sure not," Granby said.
"'We'll have to take a room somewhere, if any place will let us through the door, to wash up. "'What Iskierko would do seeing me in such a state, I have no notion.'
Lawrence had a very good notion what Iskierko would do, and also Temera, and between them there would not be much left of the colony to speak of afterwards.
"'Well,' Tharkay said, joining them as he wrapped his neckcloth around his own bloodied hand, "'I believe I saw our man look into the establishment a little while ago.' But I'm afraid he thought better of coming in under the circumstances. I will have to inquire after him to arrange another meeting.
No, Lawrence said, blotting his lip and cheek with his handkerchief. No, I thank you. I think we can dispense with his information. I've seen all I need to, in order to form an opinion of the discipline of the colony and its military force.